Picture this, a city where children play freely in streets, neighbors know each other by name, and people move through their days with genuine contentment. Now contrast that with our reality, sprawling suburbs where isolation is the norm, commutes drain our energy, and despite unprecedented wealth, happiness levels have flatlined. This disconnect forms the heart of Happy City, where the shape of our urban environments directly impacts our well-being in ways we've barely begun to understand. The modern American city presents a profound paradox. Despite accumulating more wealth than any civilization in history, our happiness hasn't increased accordingly. Depression rates have risen threefold compared to two generations ago, with 1 in 10 Americans now taking antidepressants. The culprit may be hiding in plain sight, in the very design of our cities and suburbs. When Enrique Peñalosa became mayor of Bogotá in 1997, he made a revolutionary declaration. We might not make everyone as rich as Americans, but we can design the city to give people dignity, to make them feel rich. The city can make them happier. The dispersed city is our costliest urban form, requiring excessive infrastructure and resources per resident. Its human toll is stark. Consider Randy Strausser in Mountain House, California, who rises at 4:15 a.m. for a 120-mile daily commute, barely knowing his neighbors in his upscale development. Social networks have shrunk dramatically, with nearly half of Americans having one or zero confidants. Car-dependent neighborhoods produce less trusting residents, while long commutes correlate with higher divorce rates and isolated suburban youth. This isolation was deliberately engineered through financial incentives and regulations during urban transformation. Pre-automobile streets were vibrant social spaces until auto manufacturers campaigned to redefine them for cars alone, even creating jaywalking as an offense. We maintain these patterns due to the focusing illusion, overvaluing visible benefits like house size while overlooking the true costs of long commutes and diminished social connections. A 2011 Guggenheim Museum study found people were happiest when entering community gardens, confirming extensive research on nature's psychological benefits. Hospital patients with nature views recover faster and need less pain medication, while even nature images reduce anxiety and improve performance. This aligns with Edward O. Wilson's biophilia concept. Humans find nature calming because it engages effortless, involuntary attention, unlike draining urban environments requiring constant focus. Our bodies also need movement, yet modern office workers get only 1/5 the exercise of hunter-gatherers. Exercise enhances cognition and mood. Students who walked more reported higher energy and self-esteem. However, only 9% of Americans commute by walking, cycling, or public transit. This isn't about motivation, but design. A study of identical twins showed how walkable neighborhoods can reduce body weight simply through increased daily movement. Harvard students' dormitory choices reveal our poor decision-making. They consistently overvalued visible physical differences between residences while downplaying crucial social factors. Though most acknowledged relationships would matter more to their happiness than architecture, they still weighted physical features more heavily when predicting satisfaction. Jan Gehl, a Danish architect, discovered fundamental principles of urban design while studying medieval Italian towns like Siena in the 1960s. He pioneered studying pedestrian behavior with the same rigor used for traffic analysis, reaching a simple conclusion: spaces shape behavior. More roads bring more cars, more bike lanes bring more cyclists, and more people-friendly spaces foster public life. Our physical environment directly influences social behavior through neurological pathways. The hippocampus evaluates surroundings against memories, triggering either stress responses to sterile spaces or positive hormones like serotonin and oxytocin in welcoming environments. Design details significantly impact human interaction. Gehl's research shows that monotonous facades with few entrances cause people to hurry past, while varied storefronts with multiple openings encourage lingering. Large uniform blocks, particularly those with dead frontage, negatively affect residents, especially the elderly. In Bogota, Enrique Penalosa demonstrated urban design's power to address inequality. He rejected elevated highway plans, instead using gas taxes and utility sales to fund public spaces, schools, libraries, and parks in poor neighborhoods. His guiding principle was equality as a foundation for happiness. Research validates this approach. Our relative social position affects our well-being. The Whitehall studies revealed that lower-ranking employees face higher disease rates and earlier mortality than their superiors. Similarly, American cities with larger income gaps show worse health outcomes for poor residents. Current urban systems perpetuate inequality. A third of Americans can't drive, particularly affecting children, seniors, and low-income residents. Poor and minority communities have limited access to parks, jobs, healthy food, and basic infrastructure like sidewalks. In Atlanta, poor Black children risk their lives crossing highways to reach bus stops. Bogota's transformation proved that equitable design benefits everyone. Penalosa's initiatives led to downtown revival, increased school enrollment by 30%, expanded water access, and doubled cycling rates. Even car drivers benefited. The Transmillennial bus system reduced commuting times by 20%. The happy city remains out of reach for millions in sprawling suburbs. By 2030, one-fifth of Atlanta's residents will be seniors, many isolated in car-dependent areas. While 6 in 10 Americans prefer walkable, mixed-use neighborhoods, only 10% of Atlanta homes provide this environment. Architect Galina Tachieva's urban surgery reverses sprawl by restoring human-scale cities. With America's population projected to grow by 120 million by 2050, retrofitting suburbs is both necessary and profitable, especially as future homebuyers will largely be empty nesters and single adults rather than families. Despite demand for walkable communities, sprawl continues due to conflicting desires and established systems. People want walkability, but also privacy and detached homes. The market reflects this shift. Walkable urban neighborhoods in Washington, D.C. now command 50 to 70% higher prices than suburban areas. Three main barriers impede retrofitting. Existing occupancy of sprawl developments, individual property owners blocking redevelopment, and outdated legal frameworks. Ironically, the mixed-use, walkable developments people want remain illegal in most North American jurisdictions due to rigid zoning codes. Cities may seem shaped by powerful forces, but citizens can reshape them. 12-year-old Adam Cato Marino challenged his school's cycling ban in Saratoga Springs, while Aaron Naparstek transformed Brooklyn's Clinton Street through honking-themed haiku. Mark Lakeman revitalized Portland's Selwood District, drawing inspiration from Mexican village pathways. Individual choices matter. Kim Holbrook improved her family's life by moving closer to work, while Conrad Schmidt found fulfillment in a walkable neighborhood. Selling his car, running to work, and adopting a 4-day work week enhanced his well-being while cutting expenses. The happy city isn't a distant utopia. We create it through daily choices. By prioritizing proximity, active transportation, and community over square footage, we transform both our lives and cities. The happy city and sustainable city are one, built through how we choose to live. The solution to climate change, social isolation, and inequality might not be technological innovation, but redesigning cities to work with human nature. The path to happiness might be just outside your door.